Hey everyone, thanks for listening to Know Who Drives Return. To listen to all of our podcasts, be sure to visit podcast.boardroomalpha.com and make sure to subscribe so you don't miss any. And now, back to the episode. All right. Hey everyone, and welcome back to Know Who Drives Return. I'm David Drapkin. Today, I'm pleased to be joined by Jeff Walker, CEO, and Bruce Ogilvie, Chairman of Alliance Entertainment. Alliance announced a deal with Adara Acquisition, which is led by Tom Finke, back in June, valuing their company at around $480 million. So first, hey, Bruce, Jeff, congrats on the deal announcement.
Thank you, David.
Thank you very much.
So how about some introductions? Bruce, why don't you kick us off? Who's Bruce? Where do you come from?
I'm Bruce, and born and raised in California all my life there. Started a small distribution company in 1980 called Abbey Road Distributors, which was a distributor back then of LPs, A-tracks, and cassettes. And at times the CD evolved, we diversified and evolved. Had my first liquidity event in 1994. Then I had a five-year sabbatical from the music industry, but did a couple of startups. And then in 2001, during that sabbatical, Warehouse Records got into trouble there, and they were put in the bankruptcy. And I quickly learned a business, something I never want to do again, is be involved with the bankruptcy there. So that's a good thing. And then in 2001, I joined Jeff Walker, my partner here, a company he started in 1990 called CD Listening Bar, which primarily was a retailer, but eventually evolved into wholesaling to independent retailers. I joined Jeff in 2001, him and his partner, David. And then I've been with the company ever since. When I met with David, Jeff and David, they were doing about $18 million a year in sales. Jeff and I have been able to grow the company to roughly over $1.4 billion in revenue now.
Great. So full history in the music and consumer products distribution land. And so, Jeff, you have a similar story, it sounds like.
Yeah, pretty similar. Me and my friend David, we wrote a business plan for a music store back in college at UC Irvine. Graduated in 1990 and decided to open the store later that year. It was called CD Listening Bar. You could listen to anything in the store at the bar before you bought it. And quickly opened a second store 18 months later. And then our friend Bruce Ogilvie had sold Abbey Road. And we, David and I, decided to get into wholesaling of music right from the back of our Irvine store there, and continued to grow the business from there. Exited out of retail in the late 90s, which was good timing right before e-commerce and stuff started to pick up, and really started to sell to Amazon right at the very beginning before they were able to open with the record labels. We were one of the three distributors that were selling them back in the late 90s. And then Bruce and I, since 2003, as he said, have been working to grow the business. We've done over a dozen acquisitions over those last almost 20 years together. And we're sitting with a pretty significant distribution business now that's much more diversified out of music into music, video games, collectibles, arcades, and We really had to do that diversification, and that's really what's been one of our winning formulas for sure.
Yeah, and I was going to say, it got me even nostalgic reading about your business, the days of used to, you know, going to the music store. So how about, what's the quick overview for the listeners that aren't as familiar with the current business and how it's set up today, and what you're focused on?
Well, we're primarily a distributor where we buy packaged goods and media goods from content providers, the music companies, the video companies, the gaming publishers, and accessories that are related to the entertainment industry there. And over 60% of our business is wholesale, where we're shipping direct to retailers or distributors or exporters, whatever. And then the other 40% range is we have direct-to-consumer fulfillment, where we ship direct-to-consumers on behalf of those retailers or brands that we own ourselves there and all that there. We're kind of labeled like a one-stop, one stop for all your needs is kind of what the industry lingo is there. But really, we are a distributor slash small retailer and integrator as far as doing direct-to-consumer type fulfillment.
Got it. And so who are some of the bigger distribution partners? Where, what stores or places am I finding your goods at?
You're talking from what retailers we sell to? Yes. Jeff, I'll let you go with that. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. You know, we're with all the big boys, do significant business with Walmart, Target, Best Buy, Kohl's, Wayfair, Home Depot, Amazon, of course, eBay. And then we also are servicing over 1,200 independent music stores here in the U.S. And then we have a pretty robust export department selling into right now 72 different countries. Don't ask me to name all 72. I don't think I know 72 countries, but you know, it's a pretty robust business for us. I want to touch on an example of what we're doing with Walmart. We're the managers of all the music sales in Walmart. So all the CDs and vinyl records, we manage all the SKUs that are in there. We also manage all the replenishment for the 3,900 stores. So we're shipping a box of CDs and a box of vinyl records to all the Walmart stores on a weekly basis. We also do exclusive distribution of some video product with our distribution solutions division. That also goes into Walmart. So we have a 3,900 boxes of DVD going in there. And then we also manage some video game product at Walmart with Bethesda and Square Enix, and then all the value video games at Walmart. So another box going to 3,900 stores of video games. And then just July 1st, we acquired Think Threefold, which does a lot of trend and collectible business in Walmart. So there's a 4-foot section in Walmart of collectible product. And right now we're also have the end cap at Walmart with Stranger Things product on it, which is blowing out the door. So that's an example of what we do with retailers. We do that with a lot of other retailers besides Walmart as well.
And those are long-term types of deals or varied in length?
Well, like the deal could end tomorrow. although, you know, we're really ingrained in their business and it's very sophisticated on getting all their point of sale information daily, running it through our computer systems. In music in particular, you really have to, stores are traded by the different genres of music. So you have an urban, a Latin store, a country store, more of a classic rock type of store. So those type of things that we've developed over the years really kind of have us as a really great solution for the retailer there.
Right. So I must admit, I was actually kind of shocked that there's still hundreds of million dollars in sales and things like DVDs and CDs. And so to someone like me or who's less familiar, what is the what, go for it?
It's actually billions, hundreds of millions, billions.
Yeah, sorry, I meant for Alliance in particular. But what is the future look like for, you know, a world that is increasingly becoming digitized for those physical assets?
You know, David, it's really pretty simple. I take it down to Tower Records and Music Plus. If you were a real music fan and you cared about the artist and had a relationship, you went to Tower Records. If you just wanted to buy the 45 or get the hit thing and you could care less about the artist, you went to Music Plus. It's really that simple there. And now there's a lot of people now that have switched over to everything digital. And those are your Music Plus customers, and they want to buy what they want when they want it. And, you know, it's simple there. Or you love going to live events, or you're really engaged with that, you know, that movie or that TV series, and you want a collectible stuff. You still want to have that packaged media, that physical piece of product in your hands. It's certainly not going to be in the heydays of whatever it was in the peak before digital there. But it's never going to go away as far as we can tell. You know, we're all in on physical. And you know, you can just look back, you know, they thought the death of books was going to happen with the Kindle. And lo and behold, the Kindle has not killed books. People still want to put something on their coffee table there when their friends come over and they can brag, you know, I'm really into this or that or whatever there. And it takes physical media to accomplish that there instead of stuff being locked up in your phone that nobody can see and know what you're doing and what's going on in your life. So.
Yeah. And let me add to that. I think also on the vinyl side, 7 years ago, we were running right at about 12 million in vinyl, which was just kind of an afterthought in our business at that time. And right now our run rate is well over 300 million a year of vinyl sales. And that continues to grow substantially. We're still in a market on vinyl where the manufacturers, there's not enough manufacturing capacity to keep up with the demand. And I think probably the realistic answer in music is it's going to be a digital solution and a vinyl solution. And you're not going to have much CD in the middle there, but those artists are going to want to put out their product on vinyl, and the collectors are going to continue to want to have a vinyl piece of their favorite artists.
Yeah, I was going to say, looking at the numbers, it seems that is exactly what you just said. The vinyl is outpacing CDs and is more of that nostalgic collector's item. And
well, the complaint of the CD was just too small. You wanted to read the liner notes and they had to put these complicated booklets in there, where vinyl now, everything's on the back cover there. There might be something inside the jacket, but that's really what the fans like. And whether they actually open up and play that vinyl, is debatable. The younger audience that's, buying a lot of vinyl right now, they're really into it. And they think that's the cat's meow right now.
So like, I can't replace vinyl with an NFT of a vinyl.
I don't know. Well, I don't think you'll hear it. It won't come through. One component on that is interesting. When it switched from vinyl to CD, there was such a complaint that your 12-inch by 12-inch vinyl artwork was now on a small little CD, and that was the big complaint. And now I laugh today because on our phones, that little artwork thing is like a centimeter by a centimeter, it's like the person's, art, it just disappeared. So that's where it comes from.
And now a word from our sponsor, Boardroom Alpha. Boardroom Alpha delivers Moneyball for public company officers and directors, so you know who drives return. Evaluate the full track records for every CEO, CFO, and director with exclusive ratings, tracking of insider buy and selling, executive compensation, SPAC and M&A history, relationships, and more. Also, evaluate companies from a performance-focused governance perspective that includes board and executive team ratings, diversity, compensation analytics, board risks, and more. Institutional investors use Boardroom Alpha for idea generation and validation of longs and shorts, while everyone from executive recruiters to proxy advisors and others rely on the data to keep up to date on all people activity and easily search for top talent. Learn more at www.boardroomalpha.com. So what does your growth look like? What new products or maybe geographies are you looking at for expansion here?
Well, I think as far as our continued expansion, we grew up as a one-stop in music, which means we carried everything on the music side. And we've taken that one-stop approach into video, gaming, collectibles, and so forth. And when you put all of that together, right now we have over 485,000 unique SKUs in stock in the warehouse, ready to sell. Those are available on websites around the world and so forth. And so when you look at where we're trying to go with continued products, we're trying to really be that go-to company for entertainment products, anything that entertains you. It can be what we've been talking about. It can be an arcade. It could be a lava lamp. It could be a twinkly lights that, you operate on your phone, stuff that's in the trend as well as entertainment. And so you kind of look at Alliance. I put it in a category with like an Ingram Micro, who is the killer in computers and that side of it, or Grainger in the space that they're in. So that's where we're looking to really continue to build alliances. Anything entertainment related, you're going to be doing business with Alliance in some form or fashion there. And for us, we have a very wide scope of customer base of anybody who is selling all those type of products. So, you know, a new licensor or a new manufacturer has some type of product that fits into that entertainment space that, you know, we're the first person that they want to go to.
Excuse me. And so looking at your financials, you mentioned approaching 1.4 in revenues, which is great. I know
we just completed just over 1.4.
Okay. So now it's official.
Official. Yes.
Now it's official. I know obviously 2020 was COVID, but huge jump from 20 to 21. What can you attribute that growth to?
Well, in September 30th of 2020, we acquired Kokum, mm-hmm. which was a competitor to Mecca. It was another acquisition we did in 2018. And they were a game distributor. And that was about a little over 400 billion of our revenue out of that one. Our 1,324 number there, you would just take that out of there. So really we went from our growth was without Kokum, we went from a little 700 million roughly to a little over 900 million. Mm-hmm. So Kokum was definitely, you know, that acquisition really pushed our top line revenue as well as our bottom line too. It's a fantastic acquisition for us there. But during that same period there, with that growth you're seeing there, we also had our growth in vinyl. And we have another division called Distribution Solutions, which is exclusive content that we distribute of 31 movie studios to retailers. And that division went from like 80 million to roughly 150 million in that same time period there. So that's where and one last category was our collectibles, which would be like Funko, Hasbro, Lego, Mattel. That division was also growing.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. You mentioned earlier that, so you just mentioned the last acquisition, do you tend to still be acquisitive going forward? Is there anything that you have your eye on or should we expect you to stop the M&A?
No, we have our eyes on lots of stuff where we spend a lot of conversations in that particular area. I think that's one of our strengths. We have a really great team of people that have really come from the different acquisitions that we've done over the years. And that team is consistently working on our organic growth and growing our business organically. And then we're constantly looking at different acquisition components to add in. As a diversified business now in a lot of different categories, of different sales channels, different product lines, it really opens up the door for a lot of different acquisition opportunities as well. If we were only selling music and we were only looking for people that were selling music, it would be much more limited. We're definitely in conversations right now. It's a component of why we're going through the de-SPAC process and becoming a public company. It gives us a whole nother level of opportunities in the acquisition side. Right. And so, yeah, we're going to be pretty active in that space going forward.
Right. So perfect segue to the deal itself and, you know, why is now the right time to enter the public markets?
Well, I think for us, you know, this process started just over a year ago, maybe 16 months ago, really looking at, okay, what's our next steps with the company? We have obviously a pretty solid business platform with, you know, 1.4 billion in sales, solid earnings, a good team of 1,200 people. So we really have a great platform that we've been able to build. Bruce and I have built this. We still own 100% of the company. We have not had any outside capital all the way to where we are today. And we just felt it was time for us to move into the next step as a public company and have that access to capital. We've got the experience in doing the acquisitions. We feel we can stay on that path and continue to do that as a public company.
As a public company, it'll open more doors and more opportunities for us there. If we can demonstrate we're very well capitalized and having public financials, it just changes the whole perspective of new companies wanting to do businesses, whether it be new customers or new suppliers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think to add to that, what Bruce just said, you got to realize that a lot of the businesses that we're working with, Microsoft, Sony, Nintendo, Universal Music, you know, all the big retailers, those are all public companies. And at the end of the day, when they want to continue to put more and more eggs in your basket, you know, and work closer with you and have more sales with you, you know, if it's a vendor, more credit risk with you, if it's a customer, you know, it's like you said, at Walmart, you know, the fear is not us losing Walmart. The fear is, you know, us being out of business. So, mm-hmm. you know, those big companies really, you know, like to work with the other well-capitalized businesses out there. So we see that as a continued opportunity. You know, if we're bidding on stuff for a particular retailer or vendor, you know, having that financial strength behind you definitely puts you up in another category on those bids.
Right. And then on the SPAC side, what drove you A to, I guess, the SPAC vehicle, B, anything specific about the team at Adara that was attractive in partnering up?
Well, we got along really well with them. That was probably a good start. Tom Fink and Tom Donaldson have really done a good job for us as working with us and guiding us through the process there. Tom Fink, with his experience, has been really helpful, and he's technically the CEO chairman right now, is where it stands right there. And Tom Donaldson is on the legal side of things there. We've worked with their other team members, Paul Porter and other guys involved there, and so far so good. No complaints there. We probably talked about 8 to 8 different SPACs, some of them we didn't really fit into what they were trying to do or the direction they wanted to go there. There was narrowed down to about 3. And we kind of zeroed in on the Adara team just because we just felt we could work with them and, you know, get along with them. And they felt really comfortable with what we were doing. And, you know, they visited our operations and we took them through everything and showed them everything. And there was just a good click, a very comfortable relationship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's great. And so then the elephant in the room, just given where the market is when it comes to redemptions, I guess, A, what would be the use of proceeds for anything that comes through in the deal, and B, any chance you'll look at additional financings prior to close?
Well, yeah, I'll take that one. we're a little bit unique, I think, in the SPAC component. There are some other established businesses that have good profitability running through going through the SPAC process. So for us, you know, we're not in a situation where we need capital to survive and continue, you know, operating our business. So our capital was really more about, you know, what opportunities going forward and so forth. Mm-hmm. At the very beginning, one of the big questions for us was, you know, we bootstrapped this all the way with, you know, asset-based financing and stuff like that. And we're like, wow, if we have a whole bunch of cash on the balance sheet, what are we going to do with that? So we're going to get heavy redemptions. We're working hard to have in that $15 to $20 million range stay in from the SPAC. We think we can hold it in there in that range, and that gets us into being a public company and. Yep. And operating as a public company, which we're pretty well set up to do. And then as acquisitions come along, we'll determine with that acquisition whether we need to go raise capital to close it. The seller in these new cases might want to stay on board or have some skin in the game as well. So we might not have to go out to raise the capital. We might issue some shares to the seller and so forth. So, we just need to get over the hump and get these backed and run from there.
David, there was a belief that we could actually raise a pipe last year.
Yeah.
That turned out to be fake news.
The pipe market is quite difficult today. It's pretty closed. At least the traditional $10 pipe, you know, there's
correct
more expensive convert financings, et cetera, that you see pop up. But more companies like yourself, actually, that do less less flying taxi, more, you know, profitable. That
right,
as you said, Jeff, they don't need, you know, a $500 million pipe to keep going. So it's really only
we weren't desperate to raise money. That was not our main driver there. We were just more felt like make us a stronger and better company, becoming a public company. It's a very expensive road to go down to be a public company there.
Yeah.
But we're thinking much bigger, where we want to be a $5 billion company down the road, $10 billion. What is the path to get there? And so this is another step in our many steps to where we got to today.
And so you're excited to become public company CEOs and go through the quarters and the investor calls and the questions?
Excited and terrified. How does that sound?
Yes. No, we're good about that.
Yeah.
You know, we also realize at the end of the day, you know, it all comes down to operating the business, running a good business, you know, growing the business. For us, you know, what is happening at Alliance? Are we signing new distribution deals? Are we doing acquisitions? You know, we want to continue to grow the business. For me, I've been focused on growing the business for 30 years, and we have a team that knows, you know, I'm all about, I only want to work in a growing business. It's no fun to be in a business that's declining or that type of stuff or struggling. So our whole team is all about that, continuing to grow it. And this obviously gives us an opportunity with, you know, added capital and that kind of stuff to continue to grow the business. Mm-hmm. We are definitely in some categories where the overall market of those particular content is shrinking, but we continue to capture more market share in those different areas. We have a pretty high market share, over 50% in music, but in video and gaming, software, DVDs and games, we're still single digit in those particular categories. So there's a lot of potential growth still there from a consolidation standpoint. So there's a lot of nuances happening in all these spaces right now. So there's definitely, if we continue to produce good results, I think it will be a good thing being public.
Right. I know you're at the mercy of other factors, including the SEC, but any inclination on time to close when the debut will actually occur?
Well, it's just we're told that obviously we just filed our S-4 on July 11th there. So we're counting down 30 days to get back the first responses from the SEC. But we're expecting another 90 days of back and forth with SEC after that. So if we're lucky, it's going to be the first week in November.
Got it. Well, at least it's not a crypto deal, which seems to, you know, some of those guys are approaching, you know, a year since announcement. So hopefully it's easier for you guys. But hey,
yeah, I mean, we tried it on our S-4. We put everything in there, like even with the new SEC requirements that aren't official yet, we just did it the same way, like they were in place today. Mm-hmm. That was the advice of our two law firms, and we didn't disagree with that. That right. Made total sense. You know,
we're a distribution business. We buy product and we sell product. There's no real difficult aspects to understand here. I mean, we bring a lot of product in from all these different manufacturers, and we sell it to brick and mortar and e-commerce, and it's a pretty straightforward business there. So we're not in a new space of technology or a new space of medical or biotech where the SEC is really trying to figure out what does that company really, what are they doing? Legit or not legit?
Got it. Well, I think that's a great place to wrap up. So, hey, Bruce and Jeff, really, really appreciate taking the time today. Alliance Entertainment, we'll keep an eye out.
Great.
Thank you, David.
Thanks, David.